If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you here with us today. Our guest is five-time World Long Drive champion Phyllis Metty. She's getting ready for the World Long Drive Championship, which is September 25th through the 27th out in LaSalle, Colorado at the Bigfoot Turf Farm. Phyllis, first, thanks for being with us. I was looking at the World Long Drive schedule kind of leading into our conversation, and it looks like you got a little preview of the venue. Can you kind of, in an event just a couple of weeks ago, can you give us an idea of what people will be seeing at Bigfoot Turf Farm in just a few weeks' time?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. So there's going to be, the best hitters in the world are going to be out in the one place, and we're going to have, speed, hype, fast golf swings, long distances, given that we're in at altitude. And it's just going to be a fun-packed few days of, some hard hitting, and eventually we'll find a world champion.
What does this venue could maybe people, I've been watching the sport probably, 15 or 20 years over the course of my life at different points. And I had a chance to hit on the Mesquite grid a number of years ago. How does this grid you're going to hit on for the Worlds this time around compare to something like that? Or certainly even last year at Bobby Jones Links down in Atlanta, where you're based.
The cool thing about this venue is that we have a lot of space. And I think the problem that we have with long drive sometimes is finding the space that will allow you to have a long grid that's about consistent, kind of like Mesquite, right? But also has space on each side so that if we were to hit the ball wide, we don't have to really worry about someone's house or car or windscreen kind of thing. So the awesome thing about this grid is that it is open and it's wide. And really the one thing about hitting out in altitude is that it can be anybody's game. If we are in comparison to Bobby Jones and Eagles Landing, where we were last year, at about 1,000 feet, ball flight is more important. And also last year's grid was more so an experienced player's grid. So, this is anybody's game, this coming world championships. And, 4,800 feet is where we'll be standing on the tee box at Bigfoot in LaSalle.
When you're assessing a venue, you just kind of got into it a little bit. What are the things you're looking for to try to figure out where your edge might be or what you might have to overcome as a player, whether that's ground conditions, whether that's thinness of the air, elevation? What are you looking for specifically?
So we're always looking at, first you got to find out what your strength is, right? Are you a carry player or are you a person that likes to land the ball and let it roll out, the rest of the way? And for me personally, I'm a carry player. And so, I kind of pride myself in ball flight too. So with that being said, I like to see a grid that is nice and even, and I'd like to see a ball flight that flies nice and high, so it will somewhat kind of suit my eye and the way that I play. But I also have to make sure that we have enough spin to hold the ball in the air long enough so that we can get that carry and we do get that little kick of roll. And from what I saw at our event 2 weeks ago was that the right side might be a little bit hotter than the left side. So something to be mindful of when we're going into it.
When you're preparing that week of for the event, are you trying to figure out the right, I guess, lines to take is the right way to go?
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about it. Are there certain lines you're looking for? Like, all right, 10 yards off the right edge with a draw? Or how are you trying to think about maximizing distance and opportunity?
So the problem that I had a few weeks ago was that my ball didn't spin enough to stay in the air. And every time I wanted to kind of ramp up the next round and the next round, I ended up hitting less and less. And so, I'd start a set at like 370 and then I would end up with a, 340, 330, 323. And I'm like, what the heck's going on? Okay, no spin. So for me, I'll be looking at something that feels like a block out the right hand side or up down the right hand side of the grid. That will allow the ball to kind of move. I tend to move my ball right to left most times. And so if I can feel like I'm blocking the ball out the right side of the grid, hopefully that'll stay up in the air long enough and, land and kind of carry on out. That's what I'll be looking for.
So, are you trying to look for as minimal shot shape as possible? Because can that cost you distance in the long haul? You're trying to look for kind of a tighter curve to the ball?
Yes. And, with less spin and less, I guess, with thinner air, right? Something that has less spin, which is usually a draw, a high, roping draw that you hit, kind of like a knuckleball, it's not going to stay in the air long enough to be able to carry. So, I want to be able to know that when I ramp it up, I have a game plan that will stay long as opposed to get shorter and shorter each set.
How does equipment, head, shaft, grip, ball, I mean, how does that factor into trying to achieve those maximum results for that specific venue?
So I think I'm probably one of the only hitters that has like a stock standard driver, like driver head. Now I do have premium shafts from Japan by the company Rev. So maybe a little bit more loft. I've always used fairly high lofts in comparison to some of my other competitors. And I find it's if you let the club do the work, right, you don't have to work so hard. And that also means, too, when you change the loft of a club or you keep the loft of the club rather than having to dial it down a couple, you don't have to hit up on the ball so much. And, I'm a lot older than a lot of these other girls. So I want to be a little bit more efficient with how I move. And, as the saying goes, the older you get, the wiser you become, and hopefully this wisdom will pay off with good numbers at world championships.
You're a five-time world champion. What is your level of nervousness when you do that first set at a world, and how does it compare to earlier in your career, even before you ever won a world championship?
It feels the same. It's nerve-wracking each time. If you don't care, it probably means it's time to hang up the golf clubs. But I still get those nerves. If I think 2024 versus 2006, I still got the nerves, like that 19-year-old girl that teed it up for the first time at World Championships in Mesquite, Nevada, back then. And it also to me it also kind of just tell it tells me how much respect I have not just for my other competitors but also for the organizers of the event, the tour, and I think just kind of for my craft. So I still get the nerves. I'm grateful to say I've done it quite a few times, and I love being able to get up on the tee box next to the other girls and just give it what I've got.
Do you feel like you manage that whatever internal feeling you have differently or better over the years? Is that kind of part of the secret of being a five-time champion, or do you just kind of handle it, just kind of let it exist?
I let it exist, but I also there has to be like an element of acceptance that you take up on the tee box. Okay, accept that something might go wrong, accept that your ball might not stand on the tee, so you have to kind of change it up. But also accept like if on the driving range you're playing a draw and you're practicing this and that, and you get up on the tee box and all of a sudden you have a fade, you're like, well, I'm not going to go looking for that draw. What I am going to do is if I'm hitting two of these, I'm going to hit the rest of them like this. So just kind of adjust. And so I think that's first few times in my career on the long drive tee, I kind of went looking. I had something and then went looking for something else. I think the wisdom's kind of just taught me to like go with what you've got and give it all you have.
All right, so let's assess the competition that you're going to be facing in just a few weeks' time. Number two in the world right now. Can you kind of give people who may not be familiar with the sport the lay of the land of who you see as the biggest competition for this title, other than yourself, of course?
You know what? Some of the girls have been hitting the ball really well this season. I haven't I didn't compete. We had three events leading up to World Championships. I missed the one in the middle. But you've got your Monica Living, who's the local legend in the area. She's new, but she's won quite a few tour events. Kelly Rudney, who's kind of like a vet like me, but she's still new to the sport. She's swinging it like hell at the moment, which is awesome. She's always a contender to look out for. But I believe that we'll be missing one of our long hitters, Mai Dishatipa, who is like such an athlete, swings a club so quick. But she's going to be back home in Thailand at an interview for a new visa, which will allow her to be in the United States longer. So her long drive career isn't short. It's going to be a nice long one. She's nice and strong, and she's a great athlete. I look forward to seeing her in the future, like kind of take over. And I'd like that to happen. But we also have quite a few girls from Europe and in Florida that always sit in the top eight and are just waiting for their turn to get to the top four. Cassandra Meyer, she's always a great competitor. Who would I look out for? I think Monica's on her way. If she can hit the grid and she can find a ball flight that suits her, I think she'll have a good chance.
If you're trying to kind of figure out a type archetypes of different long drivers, are there kind of players that kind of fit in different categories of, all right, they hit the grid a lot, and so they can might kill you with consistency. They might hit 4 out of 6 in the grid kind of thing, versus someone who can just go nuclear and they just need one good swing to beat you. How are kind of the different types of players you're going to face? What does that look like?
You have players like Ana Dreyhaus who will like six who will hit 6 out of 6, right?
Okay.
And she sits kind of like on the high end of the middle of the pack. And so, you have a bad set against Ana, she's not going to miss the grid. You've lost a match. And then you have someone like Cassandra who will put out a ball here and there, and you're like, whoa. Where did that come from? And I think sometimes because she's still on her speed journey, she surprises herself too. But I think, earlier this year, I lost to Monica in the semifinal in Mesquite. I got six balled by her, and I lost to a great number on that grid. And so, she I think she missed the grid. She missed the grid five out of five, and she was going with her last golf ball, and she 350'd me. So, you know what? Monica's that person. I'm probably that person too that may have like a rogue set in the competition that could potentially hit a six ball and, beat everybody else on the tee box. Yeah, I think the one to look out for though in terms of like killing you with consistency would be Anna and Cassandra.
What do you look for more in a world championship situation where maybe the nerves are ratcheted up? I mean, it's obviously a big deal to everybody competing. Is consistency something you want to look for in kind of the early rounds just to make sure you survive in advance and then you kind of pick up the pace as you go? Or how do you kind of progress your way through the tournament?
You're always looking for good contact. Well, I am. I'm always looking for good contact. I know that there are a lot of other players that look for speed, and the guys are always looking for speed. Like, if I can get this 160 swing, down the grid, it's going to be long. The women are a little bit more economical, so they want to get the ball like in the grid, and then they can go nuts, right? So, for me personally, I'm looking for ball contact, really good ball contact that's reliable. Then I could go, okay, this is what I have. This is what I need to put it down. Let's go. And if the, we always have a plan of, or a strategy of how you hit your six golf balls. And to me, if I'm hitting my first two or three, and I would like to say two in the grid, then I can kind of relax and then move into my rhythm. But I'm always looking for good contact first. I'm not really worried about ball flight as such until I know that I've got good contact, and then we let it loose from there.
Is that kind of how most competitors pace their set of six? Hey, let's get a couple in and then we can go nuts. Or are there people who are just to the wall, all six balls.
The guys all to the wall, and they hope they get one ball. And watching them practice, they're like, "Oh, that's a good one," right? But never once do they go, "Oh, I'm going to hit the grid first." They go, "All right, see, let me see if I can smash this." The girls, I'm fairly certain. The personalities that I know of the girls, I'm fairly certain they go, "Okay, let's get one in," and then like give it hell the rest of the way. But until that one ball's in the grid, you just never know. And then there's, when you get to like balls three, four, and five, I've noticed through watching a lot of the women compete, there's like an ounce of panic, and that's kind of the worst thing that you want to do in a situation where you need to rely on everything here that you've got to be able to get that ball moving down that grid. Once the panic sets in, it becomes frantic, and here and there they start missing the grid. They, mishit the golf ball. It doesn't have enough spin, or it has too much spin, and it ends up, kind of wavering off to the out of the grid. This grid's going to be wide, so missing the grid should not be that, shouldn't be that easy. But it's just, the fact that you're on the time clock, you're at world championships, and you've got three other women who are wanting to beat you on the tee box at the same time as you.
Is there a when panic occasionally sets in for a player, is does that mean that they kind of tense up their grip? I mean, kind of what a
Oh,
recreational
yeah.
golfer do, tense up their grip, and the exact opposite of what you want to do. And it
Yeah.
kind of constricts your body, and then you knock off distance and have less than optimal conditions. Is
Yep.
that kind of what sets in at that point?
Yes, the shoulders start to come up. They start rushing through their process. They go out of rhythm. And as time, like time is still the same, right? It ticks second by second, right? But those seconds seem to go faster and faster each time you miss the grid with a shot. Then you go, okay, well, I need to hurry up and tee up, and all of a sudden you're in a frantic rush. And it really does kill the rhythm of your swing, which will, it's not always favorable.
Is that something that you've focused on over the years, is knowing how to slow it down or make it feel like it's slowing down when everything seems to kind of be going too quickly?
It happened to me once, and so I was telling Jonathan yesterday, every world championship that I've been to, bar one, I've made a final. And I've won five out of the 10 that I've been to. This will be my 11th world championship over a 20-year span or 19-year span. But the 2017 semi-final that I lost, I ran out of time, and I don't, for whatever reason, I was so focused on everything and that was like in front of me, I completely forgot about the clock watch. And when I got to my last golf ball, the buzzer went off just before I played my swing, or just before I hit the golf ball, right? And if I had been a little bit quicker, I would have beat my friend by like 40 yards to qualify for finals. So, ever since then, I've never run out of time. And if I did only hit five in the set, it's because I was satisfied with my first three. So, it was a huge lesson learned. But it I've never really had to, I've never forgotten about the clock. The clock has always been like super important when it comes to competing on the tee box. And be it those seconds go the same way, it's just the way that we see those seconds go by. And at that time on that day, I don't know, my seconds went slower than those seconds.
Last couple of questions. As you're kind of preparing for this, what does that prep time look like leading into Worlds? Do you try to set aside more time to prepare? Do you try to forget certain things? I mean, what does that look like to get yourself feeling confident you're ready to go by the time you head out there? You feel like you're pretty well prepared.
I set aside like 3 or 4 days. Like I'm 38, so I'm much older than a lot of the other women. And I I would like to feel that I'm a little bit smarter now than I was then, but I'm also older, so recovery takes a little bit longer, and I need to actually factor that into my training programs. Otherwise, I go rampant and I have no energy. So, I put aside 3 days, 3 or 4 days where I can actually get out and practice a couple times a day. I have ever time to, sit and recover and just kind of go through my routine. But also, I like to stay busy. So I love being able to get out and train with other athletes. I love being able to help other people with their golfing game while I'm in that process of getting ready. And it just allows me to stay busy without running myself ragged, I guess. Which is, for me, that's what helps keep me happy and balanced.
All right, last question. Of the five world championships you've won, which one is the most important to you? I know that's kind of like ranking all of your children, but which one is the most important to you, and why is that the case?
In hindsight, I think my first one was my most important one, and the reason why that is because my dad got to see that. It was 10 years in between the time that I won my first and my second, but by my second, my dad had passed. So my first one will always be my most important. That will allow me to remember, well, allow me to kind of just know that my dad was watching physically, and I'm fairly certain he'll be on my shoulder this coming month. As always, just cheering me on from the other side.
It's awesome. Well, Phil Smedy, thank you so much for spending some time with me. I really appreciate it. Good luck in Worlds. I know you're going to crush it, just like you always do. And we'll certainly be watching. Thanks so much for the time.
Awesome. Thank you.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.